Our in-depth guest today is Don Waters, Portland-based author of the new memoir, These Boys and Their Fathers, from University of Iowa Press. In addition to the new book, Don's work includes the novel Sunland and two story collections, The Saints of Rattlesnake Mountain and Desert Gothic, which won the Iowa Short Fiction Award. He teaches at Lewis and Clark College and directs their Fur Acres writing workshop. In the words of David Shields, These Boys and Their Fathers is an extraordinarily powerful, moving, and urgent exploration of the crossroads between masculinity, paternity, fantasy, truth, and howling sadness. Don Waters, thanks for coming into KABU.
Thank you so much for having me.
Don, it's an incredible story how your book came to be, and in a way it's a memoir based on a memoir. Your father, Robert Waters, abandoned you and your mom when you were three and you were living in Reno, Nevada. Then you got back in touch about 15 years later on your 18th birthday. On a subsequent visit with your dad, which you said was about a year later, he gave you a manuscript of his memoir, which he called Story of My Life. But you put it away in a drawer and didn't open it until 6 years later.
Yeah, I mean, I was angry.
That's what I was going to ask you. Right. Why did you avoid reading it for so long, and what led you to picking it up after all that time?
I met him again when I was 18, 19 years old after, a long absence, a long abandonment. And, then he found out I was a writer. So he decided to write his own autobiography. And it was a sort of story where, he wanted me to know who he was. And at that point I didn't know, I wanted him to know who I was. As his son. So
he has a very poignant letter that starts off the book that you wrote to him when you first were going to meet him at the age of 18.
Right.
1992.
Right. Yeah. And so, yeah, I put it away. And then, as time went by on, he started getting ill. And so I wanted to, see what stories that, autobiography contained. And then when I started reading it, I realized I was really clicking with one particular chapter, which was the surfing chapter.
The surfing chapter.
Because we really, I had no idea that he had this whole history of being a surfer. So I really clicked with that. But it took me a long time to really read it and take it seriously.
Now, after you read the manuscript, you started investigating your dad's life, even to the point of getting your parents' divorce papers from the courthouse. And you found some common ground, though ground is not exactly the right word here, your mutual love of water, of being in the water, on the water. Can you tell us about that connection? Is that the surfing part? But he was also on a submarine in the Navy, and he raced and sailed ships and...
Yeah, I mean, my father was a true waterman. He grew up, in Manhattan Beach, California, in Santa Barbara. He was a surfer. He was, basically there when surfing was becoming a thing in California. He was at the forefront of this, what would become a huge movement. And, he's surfing these great places like Hollister Ranch, which is now, off limits to people.
Right, and that's in the book, too, towards the end.
Right.
And then also Manhattan Beach, which starts off the book.
Yeah, on Manhattan Beach is where it's, that's like the city of the surfing origins for, the West Coast. So he was a sailor, and in his retired years, he sailed on sailboats, and he had his own sailboat, but he was also in the Navy, on a torpedo submarine. And he gravitated toward water. And then what's really interesting to me in his memoir is the point at which he then basically does a complete 180 and moves away from the water, and that's after I'm born. And he becomes a miner, and he goes into the desert, and he basically stays into the desert for the rest of his life.
And you yourself lived as a child in a place with no water around it, Reno, Nevada. So
yeah,
somewhat of the desert there.
Yeah, I mean that's why it was so surprising to me is I grew up in Reno, Nevada. It's high desert. You're sort of 4 hours away from the ocean. But then later on, when I was in San Francisco, I got into surfing, and so that was really interesting. And at the time too, I was swimming every day. I swam a mile. At the pool every day.
So it's almost this genetic connection between you and your dad, that love of water.
Right, right. I mean, I think everybody loves water, but I really was drawn to it.
I know
it.
Some people are deathly afraid of it.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, I really loved it. And so that was, something for me to really sink my teeth into and to connect myself to him and sort of you know, find some sort of bridge, because the relationship between my father and I was always just this huge, massive disconnect and a huge, you know, all the silence and the stories that were not told. And so I wanted to find, you know, some connection to him. And that was the story of his surfing life that really connected to me, to him at first.
And that was the genesis of the book. Back in June 2012, Outside Magazine, they published your article, which was based on the surfing chapter in your father's manuscript. And there, in his manuscript, he wrote of those early days in Manhattan Beach, and he grew up next to a surfing legend, Greg Knoll, who was famous not only as a big wave surfer at the time, but also as a surfboard shaper.
Yeah.
And
a filmmaker.
Films?
Oh, yeah. He would you know, have these surfing films, and then the soundtrack to the surfing films would be jazz music. So you'd have all these, you know, kids who would be piling into these auditoriums just to watch these surf films, these old surf films with, you know, jazz. Because that was cool. So
that was before Dick Dale mm-hmm. and the Beach Boys.
I'm sure that was soon after.
Right. Surfing got its own music a little later.
Right.
Yeah, in the 60s. Mm-hmm. Now, after your father died in 2009, and this is part of the article in Outside, you actually tracked down Greg Knoll. He was living in a very small town just outside of Crescent City in right. Northern California, right. and he was somewhat of a recluse. What was the reason for your quest? Well, I mean, you went through a lot of trouble.
Yeah, I just wanted to, you know, I was just wanting to explore this story, you know, of my father. And so this was sort of a way to do it. And I feel like sometimes it's really hard to go at something, you know, straight on. And so it's easier to go at, you know, things that are hard sideways. And so to get at this sideways, I, you know, sort of invented this story. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go and I'm going to build a surfboard with Greg Knoll. And that's my idea of what I'm going to do. And in the process, I'm going to feel somewhat a little bit whole. But, you know, that's just sort of a magazine article. But that's what I did. And I tracked him down. It took me, I think it was almost 8 months or 6 or 8 months or something like that.
He kept ignoring
you. He kept ignoring me. I was finding his, you know, his telephone number. I found his telephone number. I was writing him, you know, postcards every time I'd go, you know, surfing. I would write emails to not only Greg, but his son, Jed. And I, you know, finally tracked them down, and they finally agreed that fine, we will build a surfboard with you. And when I went up there, they were just completely lovely people. And we built a surfboard.
And not just any surfboard. You did one like your dad
right.
had, which was this big board.
Right. It's called a Malibu chip.
Yeah, made of balsa wood,
right.
Which you don't really see anymore. They're all different materials. Yes. They're much smaller and
right.
lighter.
It's foam. And these days, you know, they're all, you know, mass produced. And this is doing it by hand. And it was a really amazing experience to be able to do that. And, you know, and what I say in the article is it's I'm building a positive experience of my father by doing this with somebody else's father, and because it's associated with him. Right?
But also observing the relationship between
right.
Jed and his dad,
Jed
Greg.
And Greg right.
Now, that seemed like a extremely positive, supportive father-son relationship. Mm-hmm. So how did you feel at the time? I know you say you were a little bit jealous, but also kind of euphoric almost to see something like this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's sort of mystifying to me because I just basically didn't have a father my whole life. To see, you know, love between an older man and his son. And when I went to visit them, they basically, Jed has, you know, been raised in his father's, you know, I say in his father's sandals, but in his father's shoes, you know. I mean, he's into surfing, he's into shaping, he emulates his dad. And to see that connection and that love between these two people is amazing to me. And, you know, that's sort of the reason I titled my book, These Boys and Their Fathers. It's because I've, you know, throughout my life searched out those healthy father-son relationships to give me some sort of guidance. And I knew the boys to sort of, you know, like if you're a certain type of boy, you're going to have a certain type of father most likely. And so I sort of gravitated to those, you know, those kids and their fathers too. I mean, and those fathers always sort of took me in and, you know, mentored me in some way. And sometimes they didn't, they had no idea. You know, I sort of just learned from them like a like a little vampire or something, you know, sort of go trailing it after them, and, you know, and but yeah, sometimes they have no idea, you know, just being a decent, you know, good father can teach another kid without a father a lot.
Now the that article that we mentioned and your experience with Jed and Greg, that was back in 2012, and the memoir just came out. What made you decide to turn that article into a full-length book, a memoir, and what were the challenges?
Well, so here's the thing with this memoir. I've essentially been writing this memoir for 20 years. Uh-huh. I tried my hand at, you know, I've been writing since I was, you know, in high school. I did a zine in college. You know, I wrote.
I read that in the book. Got you into trouble.
Right. Didn't get me into trouble.
With the dean.
Yeah. So I did all these, you know, writing exercises. And so when I was 21, I wrote my first, you know, attempt at a memoir because I thought, I'm going to write about this to try to understand my feelings, but it just failed because it was so angry, and I actually kind of jokingly call it the anger manifesto, right? And then I tried again when I was, I think, 28, maybe 27, 28. I tried to write about this topic, you know, about my father, and it was just really lyrical and kind of pretentious. So it's a whole other type of manifesto. So I've always, you know, throughout my writing career, been interested in writing about my father, and it just so happened that I sort of pieced together this idea for an article, wrote about the article, and realized I wanted to continue writing about my father. And so I set off to do it, and it was this big journey. And as you know, with this book, it sort of expands in all these different ways.
You find another person named Don Waters,
right?
Another writer who was born in Scotland in the
right.
1880s or something,
yeah.
Like, and follow his life.
Yeah, it's a perfect, you know, counterbalance. I found
yes.
it to be a perfect counterbalance or counterweight to my own story, because you had this adventurer named Don Waters who was a writer in the early 20th century, raising his kid on a sailboat.
Another lover of the sea.
Another lover of the sea. Another waterman, uh-huh. And you know, was completely fascinating to me. And I thought, you know, I'm gonna research this person, see how this child, you know, turns out. And his daughter's name was Gypsy, and he named his, you know, his ship after her, his sailboat, Gypsy Waters. And so it was completely fascinating. And of course, I follow that, you know, that family throughout the 20th century. So my memoir isn't just about this relationship between, you know, my father and I, or this non-relationship. It's also about this other family.
Now, I did interviews with two women writers in the past few months, both of whom wrote memoirs and included absent or distant fathers. They had in common a number of difficult relationships with men in their early years, which one of the writers described as an intense, abiding object hunger for men, which they felt was a part, a result of that father-daughter relationship, which was not all that healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think there's something similar that men experience or maybe suffer from resulting from a father-son relationship like you had with your dad? You mentioned a few statistics in the book that 80% of the prison population
right.
came from a fatherless home.
Yep.
Kids in that situation grow up and they have a higher incidence of substance abuse and divorce.
Mm-hmm. And depression and all sorts of things. I mean, it goes on and on, right? So I actually do. I think that I'm never surprised when I hear about, you know, a school shooter or somebody who shoots up their, you know, just somebody who sort of acts out and snaps, right? I'm never surprised when I also do a little bit more research and find that this person didn't know their father or their father was absent. So I would say, you know, something sort of baseline is fury. And that fury can manifest in all sorts of ways. I mean, I think that with men, it manifests outwardly, right? So directed toward other people.
And you had some difficult relationships with women early on, which you mentioned. You were not necessarily the good guy here.
Oh, no. No, and I write about that in the book.
Yeah, very honestly.
I'm very honestly. And there's ways in which I had to really struggle with shame. You know, the anger, and a lot of these, you know, when you try to control it and you sort of try to sublimate it or whatever, you know, bring it inward, it keeps coming out, and it'll come out through depression. It's this, I think there's a lot of things that I'd have in common with other people who didn't know their fathers. But thankfully I went to therapy when I was 26 and I'm still in therapy.
That's my next question, actually. At the end of your father's manuscript, your father writes, "I wish things could have been different, but it was not, and for that, I am truly sorry." I'm guessing your book was an attempt not only to understand him, but to forgive him as well. Have you managed that?
Yeah. I mean, at the end of my book, I basically say, I forgive you. But I also realize by doing so much research into him and his life and his decisions that in some ways he just really did not know how to be a father. But what I needed was the stories, right? I needed the stories. He was completely absent. So I didn't know where he was. I didn't know where he lived. I didn't know what kind of job he had. I didn't know what he looked like. Nothing. I didn't know any of this information. And so I didn't know his family.
That's where his manuscript came in. And yeah. You've described that as an incredible gift. From your dad.
Yeah, I mean, first I didn't like it, but now I've used it.
You avoided it for a long time.
I avoided it, and it's been useful. But I can't hold on to that anger. I'm now a father of two amazing girls,
including the new 7th-month-old, right?
Yeah,
you mentioned.
Yeah, that. Yeah. And I just can't have that in my life, and so I feel like this book, in a way, is just this. It's an exorcism. It's a personal exorcism. But I also hope it helps other people.
And also by kind of realizing the faults of your father and looking at them straightforwardly, and then seeing some of the relationships like Greg and Jed, you've learned how to be a better father, I would imagine, which is something none of us are really taught. We just have kids and then we're kind of on our own.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I understand cycles and patterns and how if you come from certain backgrounds, you might repeat certain things. And, my grandmother was abandoned by her father. And then here we go again, right? And then there's me. And so I just didn't want that in my life. And I wanted the, woman I actually am with now and ended up with. So I went to therapy. I was angry in the beginning of that relationship. And I started to realize that I'm basically repeating a pattern. And I'm a part of this pattern, and I can, look away and just ignore it, or I can, do something about it, which is what I did. So, yeah, I mean, you don't know how you're going to, what you're going to do as a father, but or how you're going to be. But I feel like I'm really cognizant because I've been thinking about these issues for so long.
And this very moving, remarkable book is a result of that for all of us. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Well, Don Waters, thanks very much for coming into KABU and joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
We've been talking with Portland author Don Waters about his new memoir, These Boys and Their Fathers, from University of Iowa Press. Don will be reading and signing books at Powell's on Hawthorne this Thursday, December 12th at 7:30 p.m. You can learn more about Don and his work online at donwaters.com. This is Ken Jones for KABU's News In Depth.